You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Mario Nattarelli. Mario is a trusted advisor to executives and their companies looking to leverage their most important asset, their brand. By first being able to uniquely understand a brand's true challenges and untapped potential, then through deliberate and extensive analysis, he has helped major Fortune 500 companies and even entire countries tangibly transform, align their cultures, and deliver unprecedented growth and value. Trained as an architect early in his career, Mario uses these fundamentals to balance the art and science of brand building. He understands that a brand's essence and their cultures emanate from their strategic core outwards. Over the past 17 years, he has led teams across three continents, working for clients of varying sizes and industry focus, mostly in the areas of technology, real estate, travel, sports, and hospitality. Along the way, he has developed a proprietary set of frameworks, processes, and tools that deliver proven results. Mario, welcome to On Brand.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me.
So there is so much in your bio that I want to unpack, but a brand builder from my own, after my own heart there, when I read trained as an architect, I thought, oh, that's perfect because he has to. And then I kept reading the sentence and you said what I say, and I'm not even trained as an architect. It's just a line that I've co-opted because I think that that might be, when you look at what the job of being a brand builder actually is, it seems like that's a pretty close parallel.
Do you mean the art and science?
The art and science, definitely, but this act of kind of designing something that will eventually be built by many parties, right, and ends up being more than either the blueprint or the strategy document that you started out with.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many parallels. It's fascinating. I have no idea how I got to the career. You know, you take these turns in your life and you often wonder how that happened, right? But architecture is a great training and education, and there are so many parallels to building brands. The cultural aspect of it, too, that you build buildings and cities, and yes, they're places that provide a shelter and they perform a function, but they're more than that. They inspire, they attract, they excite, they, they do things that are kind of society forming in a way, right? And that's what brands do. I mean, great brands, especially. So,
go ahead.
No, you please.
Well, I love the idea of society forming, and I also want to capture that you said talked about not exactly knowing how you ended up here. And it made me pause for a moment to think that in the hundreds of guests that I've spoken with on the topic of branding, I feel like very few of them have said, well, I started out with this very focused path on my way to a career in branding with degree in branding and out of college getting my first branding job.
Right.
it's kind of a strange pack that comes from different industries, different disciplines. But so what did that that turn look like for you when you when you made the leap from architecture to brand building?
Well, I was very lucky that I started my studies in architecture, you know, were of an era where computers were just being introduced. So I was very enamored with technology within my studies of architecture. And then when I graduated, I became very proficient in the technical parts of, I mean, I really enjoyed the theory and the design of architecture, but I loved what computers were doing in the 90s around architecture. It was an exciting time. And this was just around the time the internet was becoming prevalent with Netscape 1.0. And so some friends and I started a marketing company principally, but it was designed around virtual reality and showing clients what the world could look like in the future of architecture. So we were doing it for the purposes of real estate. We were doing it for market research, and we were building, you know, these virtual worlds. It was very early days, very crude VR, and we were very lucky, and we got acquired very early. And the people that acquired us were part of Interpublic, so they put us inside of FutureBrand, and then there, very quickly, we accelerated in building tools and technologies for marketers and marketing challenges. And, you know, that was really the beginning of my education and what it means to be a marketer. I hadn't really no idea until then. And, you know, fast forward 20 years after that, I think I feel like I've learned a lot about business and about a lot about marketing, really through trial and error and through practice.
So I love how often your bio and even in what you've said already talks about culture and society. What is the interplay between who we are as groups, as people, and the brands that we're part of?
I think this is part of, I think, what excited me most about brands is that, you know, you can transform an entire organization regardless of size through this very abstract concept, right? You know, these things that we call brands are not logos. They're not, you know, static concepts. They're value systems. They're behavior systems, right? And so when you look at a very large, complicated company that's trying to be different or trying to advance or trying to, you know, conquer the next, you know, challenge or, you know, jump over the next hurdle, brand is ultimately what drives that, can drive that, right? Sure, you know, companies need to be great products and services, and they need to deliver great value to their stakeholders. But ultimately, what glues that together is the brand. And what ultimately propels it, I believe, is the brand. And so it's an incredibly privileged position to be able to help do that. And it's, you know, it's also invigorating and exciting and probably, you know, one of the greatest challenges that are out there. It's very hard.
Well, you know, it is hard. And I feel like what we run up against a lot are the naysayers that might even have pushed back on your early point on brand isn't just a logo, isn't static. I might say, yeah, but it really is. That's what it is. And when you start talking about value systems, I don't know what that means. That gets a little abstract for people.
A little fuzzy, right?
Yes, exactly. Fuzzy, squishy.
It gets a little fuzzy until you see a great brand and you recognize why. What makes it great, right? What makes Nike or Apple or Amazon great companies? It's ultimately because they're incredibly great brands, right? They're strong missions. They're strong leadership. They're strong value systems. Yes, there's great product. There's great innovation. There's all those things that you need to succeed as a business. But on top of that, there is this thing that is the brand. I mean, what else, how else do you attribute that kind of success, right?
So if someone said, yeah, you know, you're right on the value system, and then their follow-up question was, so how do I do that?
How do I make it?
Yeah.
Give me some of that, Nick. Come on.
Exactly. Where's the value system lever, right, that we can...
Right. How do I switch this on and make it quick? And by the way, do it cheaply and by tomorrow, if you don't mind.
All of the above. Question. So where do you start?
Yeah, where do you start? Well, we here believe that you build great brands through this idea of intimacy, that ultimately what you should be chasing is building an emotional connection with your stakeholders and your customers. And those stakeholders can be your employees, they can be your partners, as well as the people that are buying and using your products and services. And so here we have a very simple framework. I think it's effective because it's simple, but also it can work to assess the brand that you have or to help you build the brand that you want. And the framework works like this. There's three stages to it: essence, story, and experience. Essence is what we would call the core foundation of the brand, right? What you stand for, your principles, your purpose. How do you represent that in terms of your identity, your look and feel? How do you project it to your audiences? That's what we call essence, foundation, right? We build on that a great story, a narrative, right? So how do you communicate? What's the tone and manner? What's the content that engages and attracts your stakeholders and audiences? And then ultimately the experience, right? How do you coordinate this across touch points, channels? How do you make it feel seamless and compelling? And so we think what makes this, it's an easy sounding framework, you know, essence, story, and experience. It's extremely hard to do and do often and do well and consistently. That's why very few brands are truly great, I think, because it is hard to do all those things all the time. And it's also hard because it's not just the marketer's job. None of those things are only in the marketing domain, right? You've got technology, you've got customer service, you have product, you have strategy. All of those things have to work together cohesively. And the bigger the company, the harder that becomes, right? And so that's kind of the long answer to the question of how do you do it?
Well, and I would think that of those three steps, they're somewhat sequential because you really can't focus on story and experience without looking at your essence as well.
Both sequential and interdependent, meaning you can't get a great story if you don't have a strong essence, and you can't even if you have a great story, you can't do anything with it unless your experience is well coordinated and cohesive. So all of them work off each other for sure and build off each other. Think of it like a Russian doll. That's the kind of the way I describe it, right? Kind of essence in the middle, then on top, and then around it story, and then around that is experience.
That is a fascinating way of looking at that. You also touched on another key point that kind of gets at the challenge of this, especially, I feel like the brand in an organization does transcend several different departments. It seems like it operationally and on the org chart lives in terms of responsibility in the marketing department, but to really prosper, to really grow, it can't stay in that silo.
That's right. It has to really become everybody's job in some way, shape, or form, right? And more often, we're seeing a kind of hybridization with our clients. They're becoming a kind of mix of marketers and technology experts because more and more of our lives are technology driven, especially some industries, right? And so the chief marketing officer really is almost wearing the chief technology hat, or the chief technology officer is really doing a lion's share of what is kind of tactical marketing, right? So we're seeing a lot of that as well.
Well, I've been mentioning this a lot lately, but in her new book, Denise Lee Yone talks about the fusion of brand and culture. And culture is another one of those things that we talk about a lot with relation to the brand. But culture is something else that lives everywhere, but a lot of times in many organizations is trapped inside the HR department.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And great brands start with great cultures, right? So if you haven't got that part of it well-honed or efficiently working, you're going to struggle. I mean, if you can't convince employees that this is a great place to work and a great brand to promote and be an evangelist for, you're going to have a tough time getting customers there, right?
So I might be tying a logic knot here, but you said great brands start with great culture, and it made me kind of continue that thought. Can great brands then help continue to foster that great culture as well? Or at what point does the brand feel like something, feel like if executed poorly, then you have kind of the iron fist of the brand versus something that's a little more organic.
This is the carrot and the stick debate, right?
yeah.
Great point. I mean, you're right. This stuff feeds on each other for sure. And this can't be onerous. It can't feel forced. It has to feel organic. And it has to not just be this top-down driven mandate, right? And that's what makes this difficult. Like great cultures too, right? I mean, these things you don't switch them on. They're things that you do slowly and carefully over time with good best practices, with clear values that say somewhat consistent, right? You know, brands endure, and great brands endure better, but that doesn't mean that they stay the same either. So that's the tricky part of this, right? You look at a company like IBM, right? A massive company that every decade or so pretty much reinvents itself, mm-hmm. its orientation. That brand hasn't necessarily changed, but that culture has, that business has. And GE is another great example of a huge organization that's done that. So, you know, it's doable, it's tricky, difficult, and it's a full-time job for everybody in the leadership role.
Well, that's a really good point, especially in the ongoing life cycle of a brand too, because we focus on this inflection point of building a brand from scratch that we talk about, and in reality, as much, if not more, we're looking at other challenges, at the IBM model, where we've been around, the industry around us has changed. We can't be exactly what we are. So I think many struggle with how to grow a brand without throwing the brand out with the bathwater.
I think that's one of the biggest things we face. You know, it's this sort of shiny toy syndrome, or the not invented here syndrome, right? Very often we're faced with new leadership that comes into an organization and has to sort of either reinterpret or feels the need to restage or, you know, reinvent, right? Some of that is ego driven. Some of it is, you know, just not invented here or, you know, and I think it's really hard. It's hard to inherit things from others, other leadership owners or stakeholders and sort of enhance it, adopt it, and feel sort of ownership around it. So often companies swing, you know, you see this pendulum swinging, or you see campaign-oriented activities, right? Like marketing is supposed to be new, and this is what we were yesterday, and that's tired to us. We've heard it before, so let's try a new thing, and it should sound like this, and that's all fine in terms of tactics, but when that starts to affect the values and the core of essence of what the brand is, then you start to get whiplash, right? Like, okay, what are we today, and who were we, or what are we supposed to be tomorrow, kind of thing?
So is there any sort of system, framework of, because yeah, there are all sorts of things that, you know, you've got a regime change, you've got we're different now. Any system for, and I almost think about it like when you're packing something up and you want to like flag something so you don't lose it. The word I was going to say, and it made me think of your framework, was essence. So you don't end up inadvertently, for some of those cultural reasons, throwing away something that is key to who you are and what you stand for, regardless of this shift that you're navigating.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think the word we hear sometimes or use sometimes is equity, right? What is the brand's equity in, from a research perspective? What can you bank on that this thing is solid around? So research can help you identify some of that stuff if you're a big company. If you're not a big company, and then you need to sort of, I think, fall on some of the softer things that you discover in essence, in the essence forming part of the brand. So whether it's values or, you know, the purpose of the brand or vision of the brand.
One thing that you note in your own experience is talking about entire countries transforming.
Yeah.
can you talk a little bit about branding place? Because I think it's one of those things you can rattle off and say everything's a brand, a person's a brand, a product is a brand, and a place can be a brand. But boy, that can be a heavy lift.
Yeah, this is it's fun. This is also one of those things where you would never have imagined doing this, right? So we were doing a lot of real estate marketing work, and that led us to branding the Palm in Dubai, and that was a massive project. And then in the end, we became sort of favored by leadership in Dubai, and we ended up doing tons of projects there, big huge master plan communities, and at the same time, we were asked to help tourism boards brand their countries. We were the creators of the first ranking of countries as brands. We called it the Country Brand Index. It's a product that our previous company, Future Brands, still does today. And what we discovered in the process of doing this was that when you try to sum up what a place like Mexico or Australia stand for, or Singapore, you know, you think about the stereotypical things about a place, but there's deeper, you know, deeper sort of values, deeper essence bits in there that you need to discover. And then you need to find a way to articulate it that's unique, that's differentiating, and that is compelling, right? I don't think you can think of a more complicated thing for a country than that, right? How do you sum up? How do you sum up a place like America, for example? It's very difficult, and so there's thrilling work and challenging, and that's kind of how we got to it and what we think about it. We've developed methodologies to try to make it more manageable, and there's been some that have been more successful than others. Our work in Mexico, for example, and Singapore have stuck well and done well, but we've had some that have not gone as well. So it's difficult. A lot of that is because of regime change or economic changes. It's work that we love and adore. I wish I could do that and nothing else, to be honest with you. It's the most fun.
Well, it almost seems like it takes one of the, I mean, I think there's pretty good case to be made for all of this work of brand building being described as very hard, but it almost takes one of the hardest aspects, that a brand should be strong enough yet flexible enough that it can be bent to a variety of constituencies and stakeholders.
Well said. It's got to be flexible, but it has to be focused, right? Well said.
And usually we use that internally, like, oh, there's this department, there's this child brand that needs to somehow relate. But when you're talking about a country, you know, with a diverse population,
regions,
really,
and stakeholders, right? There's investors, there's tourists, the country brands are speaking to so many diverse audiences. Yeah.
Yeah, and you want something that everyone can be a part of, but still is a big enough idea that, coming back to the word of the hour here, that the essence is still cohesive.
Right, and with big ideas, the challenge becomes they become lofty, and then they don't end up having teeth, or they sort of feel almost obtuse, right? And and also they also start to sound a lot of the same, because you know, when you raise an idea up to the most abstract, highest level, it's harder and harder to make them distinct or unique, right? And then that's just the strategy. What about the logo, right? So what are the colors, the symbology, the iconography, the typeface, the lockups, the way that you visually represent, you know, a place that is about cultures and regions and cuisines and destinations and so on?
Well, it is. It's a question of balance, because things need to be flexible, but not so flexible that they break, that it doesn't hold together, that it doesn't still mean something, the bigger concept.
Right, right. Well, when we started this was we were doing this in the early days. There wasn't a lot of countries that had really undergone this. Now it's much more sort of many countries have sort of established strong brands or have undertaken initiatives, and the gaps in the space is much harder to find nowadays than it was when we first started doing this.
Right. I can imagine. You know, there's only so many countries in the world.
And, well, exactly. Right. How many different ways can you say, exquisite or exceptional or, you know, right. words you would use to describe the best countries in the world?
Absolutely. Well, this has been fascinating. As we start to wrap up here, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Wow. I can't believe you're going to stump me now, huh?
Oh, there we go. That's my trick. We go down the biggest, most complex rabbit hole of branding a whole country, and then I'm just going to ask you for a gut response to a brand.
Well, you know, the funny thing about this is that when you're in this business, you become so skeptical about brands. Right. The way that, what brand has made me smile lately? You know, I will say Netflix. And I'll say Netflix for a couple of reasons. So in our study of intimate brands, Netflix is a top-ranking brand. But the reasons are more interesting. And the reasons are that it is the ultimate brand for indulgence, for ritual, and for enhancement. Indulgence being something that pampers you, ritual something that you do frequently, and enhancement something that makes you feel, you know, better, more informed. And so I would say the brand that makes me smile is Netflix.
Wow. I mean, the smile, that's my deceptively simple question of something that produces an emotional response. And your reasoning behind Netflix, I'd have to say, probably ladder up to some of the biggest, most valuable emotional responses that we can experience as people: indulgence, rituals, and enhancement of making myself better.
It's a great brand. That's why it succeeds, I believe.
That is a great example, a great smile. Mario, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. You can reach me on Twitter at @mnatarelli. You can find more about Emblem, the firm that I lead here in New York, MBLM, at emblem.com. That's MBLM.com. And we publish the largest study of brands based on emotion, and it's free for you to download and look at, also at emblem.com.
That is great. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Mario, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Thanks, Nick. I really appreciate it.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Colin Finkel had me as a guest answering all of the tough questions about branding on the Brand Marketing Podcast. Thank you, Colin. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed, at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, if it is producing an emotional response in you, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.